Clayton. John Clayton.
And now, I'm done with my segment.
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
It's time to talk football with the professor, John Clayton, who has found his way back to the lovely Pacific Northwest. This feels a lot like Miami, doesn't it, John?
Yeah, it really does. Yeah. But only the transportation is much
better. Well, I was going to say, did you take an Uber to work today?
I did not, no.
Because you're at home.
No, I basically took the stairs. You know, I went from the second floor down to the first floor.
Wait, you don't have an elevator?
I do.
Oh, you do have an elevator. You should take the elevator. Save your knees.
That's true. Good point. But again, it's like you need the exercise. You want to get those steps in for Fitbit.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Do you have a Fitbit, John?
I do.
Look at you.
How about that?
How many steps you get in a day?
Not as many when I'm here at home. I was averaging, I think, down in Miami, 5,500 steps a day, somewhere like that.
Man, you must weigh like 14 pounds now.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. So what was your takeaway from the Super Bowl? We all were kind of thinking, all right, it's going to be the 49ers. They seem like the more dominant team. And then the Chiefs, and what is becoming typical classic Chiefs fashion, they dig a little bit of a hole and find their way out of it.
Mm-hmm. No, I thought, to be honest, the game, even though, again, I didn't think it was going to be a comeback that late, but the game kind of went the way I thought it was going to be. I know, like, for example, I had to make all these bold predictions for the Washington Post. And so the thing that I said was that, you know, Kyle Shanahan will come out with a decent running attack and then get a 10-point lead at some point. I didn't think it was going to extend all the way, you know, into the second quarter. But, again, I thought they were going to get a 10-point lead at one point. And, again, it went to the third quarter when they get the 10 points in the third quarter. I thought that it was going to be a guy like a Damian Williams was going to be, even though maybe not get the most yards, was going to be the most effective back in the game. I thought that was going to go that way. And I thought that, you know, you were going to see Patrick Mahomes make his third consecutive comeback in coming back in the fourth quarter and with a 10-point lead. He's done it now three times in the playoffs, was 24 points, 10 points, and that. So I think it kind of went the way that I thought, but it turned out to be more exciting than I thought.
You know, the quarterback play, it wasn't great. I mean, he was the MVP. I was looking at, John, 58% completion percentage in the second half. Mm-hmm. The two touchdowns he threw traveled 2 yards in the air, and then he threw two picks. But he did a lot with his feet. I mean, right. He extended plays, but I thought the hero of the game was the defense and how well they played in Kansas City. And Spagnuolo, how much respect do you have him? Coming out of that, John, I thought he did such a good job. And it seems like we're not really talking about that so much as we're talking about Patrick Mahomes, which usually happens because it's the quarterback.
Yeah, Spagnuolo did a great job. And that was one of the things I did predict, because I thought that they would get the upper hand San Francisco in running the football in the first quarter and that, because they're an I formation team, and I formation teams will really do poorly. I do successfully against Kansas City's defense, because Kansas City's defense, in the 12% of the time they face an I formation, gave up 6.4 yards a carry. Now, I know that's not a lot of carries, but the 12%, but I thought that was going to be the edge and give San Francisco the chance to start. Plus, you have Kyle Shanahan now with an extra week to prepare, and look at the things that he was able to do. I mean, being able to, go out and get the jet sweeps with Debo Samuel and get all the creative plays with Kyle Juszczyk. And so I thought that was going to be, out there. But then as the game was going on, as he did so much in the Tennessee game and so others, he gets more aggressive. He's willing to make the gambles and make some, get some blitzes going and all that. And he was able to do such a great job of doing that.
You think Jimmy Garoppolo was unfairly maligned for how he played in the fourth quarter?
I think so. I mean, again, and that's the problem that both he and Kyle Shanahan are going to have to face. It may be unfair, just like, for example, maybe it was unfair to criticize Daryl Bevel, but Daryl Bevel made a mistake by throwing the ball to Ricardo Lockett and getting it intercepted at the 1 yard line. But hey, when you're in a big game like that and you go 3-for-11 in the fourth quarter, you have to expect that you're going to get criticized, just like in the case of Kyle Shanahan, who did not make the right calls down the stretch, did not make the right calls in the Atlanta-New England game and blew a 25-point lead. It's unfair to maybe criticize them, but hey, that's what the nature of the beast is.
We talked about this yesterday, John, and there were three votes for one quarterback and one vote for the other, talking about Jared Goff and Jimmy Garoppolo. Who do you think's better between those two?
I think right now it's pretty close to being a tie, but I think I'd give the edge right now to Jared Goff, because you can see that He does some good things in the three receiver set. He can tend to be rattled, but not as much as Jimmy Garoppolo. Because when you get a good rush on Jimmy Garoppolo, I mean, he can really make some mistakes and do it worse. And then I think you look at the, Goff isn't real big on making turnovers. He certainly, because both of these quarterbacks are quarterbacks that are dependent on what's around them. And they're good enough when you get the right talent around them to do some things. I mean, when you get the running game going for Jimmy Garoppolo, he's decent. I mean, I thought he did a nice job, particularly on the three-step drops. I thought he did throw too many checkdowns. I thought that was a little bit too, too cautious. I think that he's better than what you think. But again, he's not going to be, I don't think he's ever going to be in that elite group.
John, we were talking earlier about the Chiefs and their ability to be a dynasty. That's always the conversation when a new team wins the Super Bowl. And we had some sound here from Mike Golic Jr. I want to play it for you and get your reaction, because he talks about the Seahawks in this and says a few things we took umbrage with. Take a listen.
We had this in Aaron Rodgers a long time ago, and then one Super Bowl later. We're still waiting for the rest of this to show up. Russell Wilson in Seattle was one on the verge of two, and now the bottom's dropped out on that. The one thing I'd say that seems different and why I would be encouraged to bet these guys year after year is everybody's rowing in the same direction. Like, you look in Seattle, that offense, Brian Schottenheimer and Pete Carroll seem to have been actively subverting the efforts of their quarterback for a couple of years now. That ain't rowing in the same direction coaching-wise.
What do you think of that? First, he said the bottom dropped out on that now, like they're not in the conversation for a Super Bowl contender, and then saying they're actively subverting Russell Wilson for a couple of years now.
I don't get that. I mean, it's like, what is that? Because I would imagine that his father would basically take the other approach, because they're kind of like Salisbury and I. And we both have different opinions, but it's like subverting. I mean, what did he subvert? He was he really had an MVP type season this year. He's averaged 26.8 points a game the year before. And, they did it with a running game that was in a first-year startup that did quite well and made the playoffs. This year, Russell did better. How are they subverting him? I don't get that.
Just for the record, I did not take umbrage. I don't take umbrage. Mm-hmm. Just as a rule, I don't take umbrage.
But, I mean, when you have umbrage, does that go with kale, or what kind of umbrage goes that? Because umbrage sounds like it's some kind of a salad.
Yeah, what's the salad dressing you put on umbrage?
Something bitter.
Not sure.
Something bitter.
Doesn't a balsamic go good on umbrage?
Maybe. You go, John. You've nailed it. It's funny. We did Chicago. It was a playoff game when the Seahawks were 7-9. And we went to Chicago, and one of the announcers, because I said something about, maybe this is a game where they sneak up, or I don't know what I said. It was nothing terrible. He goes, I take umbrage with that. I was like, oh, jeez, I don't want anybody taking umbrage. I mean, my God.
It's serious when umbrage
can't have
is
that.
Taken.
Yeah, it was just, I would like to say that I just thought it was dumb. How about that?
That comment from Golic Jr.?
Yeah, it's, you know what? Bob brought up a good point, though, John. National guys, you're not, focusing on every last little team, you're kind of, and that's just one of those things that's been going around, that Russell has been squandered and wasted and things like that. So maybe that's where he got that from.
Yeah, well, it's just like, I mean, for example, I remember at the beginning of the season saying, boy, Russell Wilson doesn't have anything at the wide receiver position. It's like, okay, well, wait a second. I know David Moore and Jaron Brown and all those guys aren't big names. And then, of course, DK Metcalf, you didn't expect that he was going to be as good as he is, but he's real good. But it's like, oh, they're done. No Doug Baldwin. There's nothing there. I mean, there's nothing there at tight end. And all I know is that Russell Wilson was, next to being the MVP of this league were it not for Lamar Jackson. And so it's like, how starved was he at wide receiver? I don't see it.
Yeah, well, and you know what? It also kind of brings to light, that now that you mention all of that, John, I mean, he made Jacob Hollister a hero, and he made, I think, DK Metcalf the rookie that he was. I mean, he had a lot to do with that. So, yeah, he's doing just fine. But I do agree that they need to get some more weapons around here. But how about a 14-year tight end, John? Greg Olsen. First of all, he said he wasn't it wasn't a mutual parting of the ways. Did did they want to keep him or did they want to kick him out? Do you know what went on there?
I don't know. I thought it was a mutual parting. So if he's saying that it wasn't mutual, then they just basically cut him and are going to become a young, not so good team. And because, you know, they know Luke Kuechly retired and, you know, he's now on the street and all that. And so, but, you know, I think that they know that broadcasting is very close to his future career and he's going to be very good at it, but he still wants to play. And, you know, the more you think about it, the more it makes sense. Okay, Buffalo could be a consideration, but if you're Greg Olsen and you want to win, you know you have a better chance with Russell Wilson than you do with Josh Allen and Washington. I mean, hey, he gets to be with his old coach Ron Rivera. But I think that's one of those things where it's like, okay, if things fall out and I still want to play, I can go to the Redskins. But I don't know where it stands with Jordan Reed. You know, both Olsen and Reed are pretty banged up after all these years. But I have to think it's an interesting option because, you know, it's not like Seattle would have to ask him to be, you know, out there 65 plays a game at tight end. But I think that, you know, he's a Pro Bowl caliber guy that could help Russell Wilson out and add that star power that he wants.
Okay, I hate to put you on the spot like this, John, because you may not have this number at the top of your head, but what would his minimum salary? He's, what, 13, 14 years in the league? What's that around a minimum?
I think it's probably going to be, you know, five and a half, somewhere like that, because, you know, you have to kind of go back to like the Antonio Gates contracts. And because, again, it's like if it's going to be next year, 2021, now you're pretty well talking close to the minimum. But I still think that you can maybe get him in the $4.5 million range.
OK, what's the minimum, though, for somebody his?
Well, his minimum as a 14-year guy would be $1,130,000.
John, can you be more specific, please?
Well, there's no change.
How many? Yeah, no change. Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I mean, you think he's going to be? He's going to.
Actually, I'm wrong on that. It's actually because it goes up 15,000. It's 1,145,000.
You're way off, John.
I was.
Come on, what? You're no good to us. No, but do you think that he's going to be one of those guys that's going to end up getting, you know, like you said, $4 to $5 million? You think he's going to draw that kind of?
Yeah, I think so.
Kind of change.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, because, again, it's like what he's got to rationalize is, okay, I can make X amount in TV. You know, he's not going to make $10 million or so, and so he's probably going to make less than $4 or $5 million on TV. Why not see if he can squeeze out $4 to $5 million in the NFL?
Yeah.
All right, what about Vic Beasley, John? A lot of talk down there, Atlanta just deciding to go in a different direction, and yet you look at this Atlanta team, just like the Seahawks with 28 sacks last year, and they're giving up a guy that had 8 sacks and led their team.
Yeah, but of course, what he's had, 7 sacks in the last 2 years after having, 16 and a half in his second year?
13 in the last 2 years.
13 in the last 2 years. Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, I think he could be a solid consideration, but not the main guy. Now, again, what I'm looking at on the defensive end position, you try to keep Jadeveon Clowney, then you make a move for a more bolder type of defensive end. You know, I don't know how high that they want to go in a trade. Or, you know, it's like, for example, I have to call Baltimore and see if Matthew Judon is one that can play defensive end. Because, I mean, you can see what Baltimore is going to do. You know, Baltimore is going to put the franchise tag on him, and then if they can't get him assigned, which they probably won't, then they'll trade him maybe for a second-round pick. And, you know, this team has the extra second-round pick, you know, that they have for the trade for Frank Clark, so they can maybe use that. And then, of course, you can structure something at, you know, 16 to 17 million bucks, and he could be on the other side. Because, in other words, you make a D Ford type of trade, and then, you know, Beasley could come in as a number three, and, you know, that really strengthens you if you can do it. And what I look at Beasley, and again, hey, we'll see what he can do on the open market, I look at him much like I looked at Shaq Barrett last year, who went to Tampa Bay, and to Bruce Irvin, who went to Carolina. You know, those two guys as edge rushers ended up getting one-year deals at $4 million. So I think you can probably get Beasley on a prove-it type of deal at $4 million.
Were there any issues with him off the field or character, personality? What's the word on him?
No. I think effort, yes. I don't think he played hard. And I think that's the knock on him the last 2 years. Maybe what it came down to, he has a 15.5 sack season, and he thinks, okay, I'm the best. I'm the Beasley guy. And it's like, well, guess what? It just didn't carry over for 2 years.
All right, John, who do you think for Kansas City? And that's what always happens to Super Bowl teams, whether the staff gets picked off or, you know, coaching staff or players. Who are the guys that are most likely to not be in Kansas City next year?
Well, they've got to find a way, whether it's a franchise tag or whatever, to get, you know, Smith done on the defense. I mean, they
you know, Chris Jones.
Oh, Chris Jones. They got to get Stinky Hands.
Stinky
is too good. I mean, you can see him with the three deflected passes and that. So they've got to get Chris Jones done. But now what you're looking at is that you got $20 million in a defensive end in Frank Clark. You know, they got decent money in Tyrann Mathieu. You got to then figure out when you want to pay Patrick Mahomes because he's going to get $40 million. And so it's going to gobble up pretty quick. But I think they can do it because remember, they did. You know, trade Dee Ford with the idea, along with cutting Justin Houston, that they're saving money to try to do some things, and of course to also to pay Mahomes. They've got $18 million in Tyreek Hill, so they got some high expensive items. And I would have to think that Sammy Watkins has a chance to be cut. But you know, like anything else, is that you know, it's when you go to the Super Bowl and you play this late. I mean, things just. You get a little bit of that hangover, that Super Bowl hangover, and I think some of that will be there. So I think they're going to be in the mix. I can see them going to a championship game, but somehow, some way, they probably won't get back to the Super Bowl. But with Patrick Mahomes, they have the ability each year to be in the Super Bowl race.
Hey, John, if I'm a Jacksonville fan, I'm not too excited about hearing that they're going to play two games in London this year.
Yeah, in fact, if I'm a Jacksonville player, I'm not going to be excited about having two games in London.
Wait, they're back-to-back?
Back-to-back.
So they're staying there?
They're staying there, yeah.
Holy smokes.
And so that could, like, let's say, for example, that they don't want to sign Yannick, and you know they want to try to go for Jadeveon Clowney. Under no circumstance could I see Clowney going to Jacksonville, because, again, he knows them from being in the division for all but 1 year of his career. He's not going to go there and then want to stay in London for a week or two. I just can't see that. And so I think that could really hurt some of their recruiting in free agency.
Well, are they getting closer to moving to London full time?
Well, I mean, let's put it this way: they're now one game, or they're one game closer than they were before. And you know, you can take that looking at it two ways, because you know, if the owner is taking the tack that it's like, okay, we're going to get that 17-game schedule, so by 2021, you're going to have that extra international game. Why not get it on the books right now? Particularly knowing that you've got double the money by playing there. And so, because that's where the revenue is half of what you can get for them playing in London. So that is appealing, but it's not appealing to the fans. And I'd be worried because now, I mean, you can see he's got enough interest over there in London that maybe, just maybe, he might pull the team from Jacksonville.
Well, and it's the story reads that they're doing it. They want to do it because they're in the bottom of the league in terms of their revenue. And this is a way to boost their revenue. So the Jags are all in favor of this. Apparently, they're spearheading a proposed $700 million entertainment district development around the stadium that would result in additional revenue. But until that happens, the Jags president said adding another home game in London is the right action for the team to take.
Mm-hmm. So no, if I'm a Jacksonville fan, if I'm the city of Jacksonville, I would worry because, you know, it may not be soon, but at some point, if the revenue is going to be that much more over there, then they're going to be over there.
Mm. See what he did there?
Yeah.
Yeah, over there. John, what about coaching? Any recent coaching hires anywhere? Any surprises? Who still needs to fill out their staff? What's going on in the coaching?
Mostly everything is done. I think they still have to do one more thing. I think Cleveland is pretty well done right now. I think you're still in Tennessee, you know, they have to find a defensive coordinator because Dan Pease retired. So that's still open down in Tennessee. I mean, but again, maybe they're covered by the standpoint that Mike Vrabel, the head coach, can call the plays. So maybe they're not as panicked on that one. But no, mostly I think everything is done. Oh, Philadelphia, I think that they still have one or two more offensive coaches to hire, but it doesn't matter too much because Doug Peterson is calling the plays.
Hey, John, I heard Mike Salk today with Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross talking about Wade Phillips. He's available, John. Bring him in as a co-defensive coordinator or a consultant here in Seattle. What do you think?
I like Wade a lot, but remember, he's more 3-4 than 4-3. His scheme is not anywhere in the mindset of Pete Carroll. And while he's a great coach, and I know his big thing is, hey, the difference between a 4-3 and a 3-4 is only you got one guy at the line of scrimmage, extra guy with his hand on the ground, and in a 3-4, they don't have the hand on the ground. So it's not that big of a deal. But, no, I don't think you want to do anything to affect what's going on with the coaching of this defense. Again, I don't think there's
– Why? What's so great about the coaching of this defense?
You think he should be fired?
Ken Norton? I think they need to look at it.
Why?
Because it was so terrible this year, the Seahawks defense. Wasn't it? What?
No, I mean, he didn't have a pass rush. The talent was not there to have the pass rush.
All right.
And again, I mean, is Robert Saleh, did he stink as a head coach or as a defensive coordinator?
Yes. No, he didn't.
Well, maybe in the fourth quarter. No, but go back to 2018, you know, when they couldn't generate any sacks and they only created 8 turnovers during the whole course of the year. Was Saleh terrible? No, he didn't have the defensive line. I mean, the best pass rusher he had on that team was Cassius Marsh. Well, you look at this, you know, they're playing with the 3 linebackers, right? And so now, in some ways, Jadeveon Clowney is a little, not too gap, but now he's a little bit more inside in what he can do as opposed to being a little bit more on the edge. That's why you can see what they're going to do is they're going to go back to the nickel, and whether it's Ugo Amadi or whoever in the nickel, and that's going to open it up for the defensive ends. But again, it's like he was limited, and that's why, you know, it's like if you don't have the pass rush, and he didn't have the pass rush, it's hard.
Hey, John, I saw a tweet. I think it was Ian Rappaport. Could have been somebody else. But basically saying that Tom Brady isn't going anywhere because the Patriots are willing to offer him over $30 million a year. Did you see that? And
I did.
Do you think that's accurate?
It's not 100% accurate because we don't know yet, because I think this is a twofold, threefold type of thing. Where it's twofold is that, okay, one, he wants to be paid. And to go to $30 million, which looks like the Patriots are going to do, that's fair enough. I mean, maybe $4 million less than Ben Roethlisberger, but he can work that out. I mean, you know, maybe he can borrow some money if he has to from his wife because she's so loaded with money. Okay, that's problem number one. So that one looks like it's solved. Problem number two is that they've got to tell him what they're going to do with the money they've saved to fix up the receiving core, the tight end core, and the offensive line. If he doesn't hear good things, then he's going to go to Las Vegas or wherever. And then the third thing is, I think that he has business things that he would like to have involvement, having the team kind of support, whether it's TB12 or different things like that. And so I think the business aspect of that, and I think that the Patriots would do that, or at least Robert Kraft would. So no, I think right now, with particularly the commercial that he did for Hulu and kind of saying, well, you know, sometimes you know, things have to come to an end, and he says, but I'm not going anywhere. That was kind of the word to the Patriots. It's like, okay, you start figuring out what I need, and then I'll stay. Well, money-wise, they're there. We don't know about the plan as far as upgrading the offense, and so, but I think that he's going to stay.
John, good stuff. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There he is, the professor, John Clayton, with us every day at 4 o'clock. Coming up, newly extended Mariners pitcher, Marco Gonzalez. Love talking to this guy. We're going to talk to him next year with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. We just talked to this guy, 2 weeks ago? Something like that. And it was one of the great interviews we've done in a while. A lot of people responded to it. And he is back with us because big news surrounding the Seattle Mariners and their number one pitcher, Marco Gonzalez, signs a brand new 4-year deal worth $30 million. So I guess the question is, where are we going to lunch, Marco?
And my answer is wherever you want.
I'm guessing you're probably getting that question from a lot of people. Do you find when stuff like this happens, or probably when you even made it to the big leagues, all of a sudden you had cousins show up you'd never heard from and friends that, hey, remember sixth grade? We were best friends. Did you get a lot of people coming out of the woodwork?
No, not quite. But maybe just not enough time has passed yet. But it's been great because I've been with my family and my wife and my brother the past couple of days. And so it's been kind of cool to unplug and kind of just make it about us for a little bit, which has been great. So,
yeah, I was going to ask you if you're with your parents.
The plan was originally we were going to be in Colorado this week and then go straight to Arizona. But when this all happened and we have the press conference today, we flew them up yesterday. It was my parents' 30th anniversary yesterday, too. So wow. It's been quite the celebration, which has been great.
I'm 27 now, going on 27 years. But 30 years, that's an accomplishment. Tell your parents congratulations.
Absolutely.
Yep.
I will. Thank you.
So, Marco, instead of rolling the dice, you just felt like it'd be more important to have long-term security by signing this extension with the Mariners?
Well, I think, you know, it was a big decision for a lot of us. My wife, my family, agency, and, you know, for a lot of us, I know that I'm a confident player. I have a lot of confidence in my ability to go out and do what I do. So I knew that this wasn't going to change that. Whether I was going through arbitration after this year or whether we got a deal done, I know that I was going to have the same mentality going out there. So I wasn't too worried about, you know, where I stood or whether or not I was going to go out and get a deal done or not. But I'm very fortunate that we have some security and a spot with this team going forward. I know that we have big things ahead of us. So I'm very, very honored to be a part of that plan.
What is it like? I mean, I'm sure you've daydreamed about this as a kid and coming up through college and all of that. But just the idea that you are now in a position financially at 27 years old, where if the worst happened, you wouldn't have to work it. You're financially set unless you're a knucklehead with your money. You're set. I mean, that's got to be a unique feeling. Is it set in yet that, you know what, I'm financially, that's the biggest concern for 98% of people in the world. And that's been taken off your plate at this point. That's got to be a pretty unique feeling.
It is unique, and it's tough to know how to navigate, you know, that feeling and how to handle that. And I, to be honest, I don't think it's really set in. So I, you know, as we go through this, you know, I'll need to learn how to, you know, handle everything that comes with that responsibility. I know that a lot of good will come from this. My wife and I are adamant about starting our own foundation, within this next year. And so this gives us a great platform to be able to go forward with that and just to be able to do a lot of good with this. You know, this we're going to be out of this is not going to change the people who we are. We are very, very grateful. And obviously, for me, it's never been about the money. It's about playing the game that I love. And this is just an amazing, amazing byproduct of that that we won't take for granted for sure.
Do you already have in mind what the foundation would benefit?
Yeah, we do. We have a couple different avenues. My wife and I are very, very committed to bringing awareness to multiple systems atrophy. It's a rare neurological disease that directly has affected our family. On top of that, I think we would love to get involved with youth sports. We've already been involved with local children's hospitals to, you know, just go and be a part of these kids' lives and bring some positivity to them. So a combination of a lot of different things. I think last year we found out the kind of impact that we could have. And so we just hope to build on that this year.
I'm going to go the other way here with this. Marco, you're a totally intense guy on game day, from what I understand. Is that right? You don't want to talk to anybody? Different kind of guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if anybody ever rushes the mound, do you have like a move in mind? Any kind of like a signature? Is it going to be a tackle? What do you think?
You know what? I think I'm just going to try to hold out long enough until Tom Murphy gets there, and I think that's going to be my move. Like, that's my go-to move is, like, I'm going to wait until someone tags me out because I need to get out of there.
He's going to yell, get him, Tom, get him!
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I just need to last as long as it takes for Murph to get out there. That's all.
Well, I shook hands with him the other day, and he's got a killer grip, and he sounds like he's, like, the strongest dude on the team, and, you know, does
his... Yeah, we call him Captain America, so if you see him around, just call him Cap, and hopefully he'll get it. He'll give you a little smile. He's absolutely one of the strongest guys I've ever played with.
Well, that's a great strategy you got there, by the way.
Wait for Murph to
Wait
get
for
him.
Murph, man.
It should be everybody's strategy, I think.
Yeah.
Hey, Marco, you had a really nice tweet following Kobe Bryant's death. You talked about him being your hero and your inspiration, and you also said, I always tried to compete like you. Before starts, I would watch your highlights just to get into Mamba mode, and boy, he really meant a lot to you.
He did, and truthfully, I mean, you could ask any athlete in any sport, and I think they would give you the same response of how much he's meant to us, and just the way you go about your business and how you compete and how you prepare and how you win, and the intensity that he brought, but also the person that he was off the court and the way that he was able to switch back and forth. Something I just deeply admired, the way that he was able to do that, and watching him with his daughters and his family and how much, you know, effort he put into the game, and then it transitioned into his family. And I always envisioned myself doing that too. And so on a deeper level than just sports, you know, he was someone that was truly, truly my hero. Absolutely.
Have you been approached by maybe younger kids, you know, teenagers that are dreaming of being big leaguers, and they're looking at you that same way, prop you up as their idol, and your intensity is something they try to model themselves after?
A little bit. Yeah, I think every time we're over at Gonzaga, especially with the Mariners caravan, there's always a couple kids that, and I always gravitate towards the little lefties too. They always, you know, anytime I see a lefty, I'm like, hey, I got to give you a fist bump, man, because you're one of a kind. You're special. You just keep on after it, but don't take my job. So it's so cool to be able to give back and pay it forward. And I think that's really what we're all meant here to do. You know, we're all meant to, you know, learn our gift and what we have and pay that forward to someone else.
Well, and that's so huge for a kid, and they remember it and they hang on to it forever. Did you ever get a chance coming up as a baseball player to meet some of your idols that played in the game or pitched in the game?
Yeah, so one of the stories that I can remember, I was at Coors Field with my dad and one of my friends and his dad, and my friend's dad was an orthopedic surgeon, and so he was, you know, working with the team doctors. So we actually got to go into the visiting clubhouse at a Rockies game. I must have been 13 or 14, and they were playing the Marlins, and Dontrell Willis was with the team. And Dontrell, D-Train, was one of my idols growing up. I just loved the swag that he had on the mound, the big leg kick, the big finish, everything he was about. And I got to meet him, and he walked up, and he engulfed my hand. I mean, it looked... His hand was like a suitcase. I mean, it just literally like covered my entire arm. And I'll never forget, he told me, you know, best of luck, stay after it, chase your dreams, but don't take my job. and I never forgot that. And ever since then, I always try to think about that, you know, how I can pay that forward and what that moment meant to me. And how I could possibly, you know, what I could mean to someone else.
Well, and then it sounds like you're carrying on the tradition of telling the kids, don't take my job, too. So
absolutely, man. I'm stealing that line. That's a good one. And the parents always get a good kick out of it, too.
Yeah. Hey, where are you as far as this time of year? Are you guys getting ready to report and, you know, the whole thing?
Yeah.
Pitchers and catchers report when? When is that? Or is that coming up here in the...
The 12th.
12th, yeah. So working out, things like that as you're preparing. What do you do this time of year? Do you start to shut down the off-season workouts? Where are you going into camp?
Yeah, I think the past week has been more light workouts, obviously a little bit more kind of explosive stuff, quick stuff. Throwing has been going really well. I feel really strong, definitely ready for the build up and to get in games and all of that. So my arm health is obviously first and foremost, getting my arm in shape and throwing. And we're going to be heading down on Thursday, fly down to Arizona. So we'll be down there about a week early to get our bearings and kind of get everything in order and get ready to go.
Well, Marco, we couldn't be happier for you, man. We love talking to you. It's always fun. You're very candid and open, and we always appreciate that. Congratulations on the contract. Have fun with your family there, and we look forward to talking to you during the spring training and the season.
All right, guys. It's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
There you go. There's Marco Gonzalez. Love talking to that guy. I hope he's still in his prime. I hope he's still top of his game when this team makes a postseason.
Yeah, he's
that'd be great.
He's great on the field and off, and yeah. Boy, starting that foundation and doing good things in the community. Love him.
Well, good to talk to him. Meanwhile, KJ Costello decided to transfer to Mississippi State over the University of Washington. And apparently, boy, howdy's fired up about it. So we're going to hear from that. We'll hear about that, all of that coming up in Sweeping the Dial next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the Dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
This is an F for the University of Washington.
Yeah.
I mean, if they hosted KJ Costello, a guy who was in their conference, who knows their program completely, he's beaten them before, he sees them constantly, he knows their players, he knows their coaching staff, and he looks at that program and says, I don't want to play for that offensive coordinator, or I don't want to play for this head coach, or I don't think your talent is good. Whatever it is, you've already lost out on your offensive coordinator that you wanted, and the guy in Kellen Moore. So you missed out on that guy. You brought in somebody who everyone kind of had a sort of a panning reaction to. This is not a good hire. And now you have a quarterback that you wanted, and he does the same thing to you. You've now just struck out on two of the three biggest, most important things on a college football team. And that's a bad, bad deal for the University of Washington. Not to say they can't come forward from this, but this is not good.
I would guess you agree with him, Jim. Jimmy Lake's not coming through on the big...
Yeah, I just feel terrible for Howdy.
Do you?
I don't know if he's going to be able to make it. Is he okay? Should we check on him?
Yeah.
The Huskies didn't get what they wanted. Oh, no. Kellen Moore, no. And we didn't get KJ Costello because he wanted to go play in the air raid with Mike Leach because he probably saw what Anthony Gordon did last year and what he did at the Senior Bowl and how he's rising up the draft charts. And then he probably saw how Gardner Minshew did, and I don't blame him for going there to Mississippi State.
It makes sense if you're a quarterback or a wide receiver and you want your stats to blow the minds of the scouts out there and get the attention you want to get to the next level. Why wouldn't you pick, especially if you're doing it in the SEC, which everybody touts as the toughest conference in all of college football. So if he's able to put up those numbers in that conference,
yeah, but how much does that help his draft stock? If you're a Husky fan, you're thinking everybody should want to play for Jimmy Lake.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see how KJ Costello does down there because he's a guy that, you know, with Leach, I mean, that's if you want to be a quarterback that's going to get a lot of opportunities, be an assistant, put up big numbers. Yeah, that I mean, I can understand him wanting to go there, but yeah, he's going from Stanford to Mississippi State. I mean, wow, that's a big move. But same thing for Leach.
You know, I think when you look at this and you look at everything that they were doing, like they had some issues, obviously, on the offensive side of the ball, and they're trying to figure out, I guess, how do we improve that? Do we go after certain guys? We try to bring someone in, and not all that different than what Ed Orgeron did, you know, bringing in Joe Brady to help, you know, revolutionize the offense at LSU. And you know, you kind of search through this, and I don't know if they were having the type of success of maybe bringing that guy in. And then you start looking around and thinking, maybe this is the time where, you know, I might not be the guy to do this anymore. I've had a good run, and it's tough. Like, coaches, when they're all in, like, when you feel like maybe you start to spend a lot of it and it's getting tough, like, maybe it's just the time for me to step away. I don't have any more oil left to burn.
That's the voice of Bobby Carpenter talking about Mark D'Antonio stepping down as the Michigan State head coach. And our buddy Son of a Gustafson was telling us that this is on the 15th, I believe, of January. He received a big bonus.
Yeah, it was like a $2 or $3 million bonus.
Yeah, 4.3.
4.3, is that what it was?
Does he get to keep that? He quits 2 weeks later?
Sure.
I think so, as long as I think the term said as long as he was employed at that point. He was the head coach.
Didn't he have health problems?
I don't think that's part of it.
I thought he did, but he looks like a coach that you would bet on.
He does. Somebody said that once. Somebody said that before Michigan State played Alabama in the Final Four, and somebody lost some money on that one. Yeah, I've always liked D'Antonio. I was looking at his record, 115-57 there at Michigan State, 69-39 in Big Ten play.
What is it about his look that makes you feel good about betting on him?
He just looks like he's in control.
He's serious, man.
He looks like a coach you'd bet on.
He does. Danny loved that one. He always gave me a hard time because, yeah, I don't even know what his record was against the spread, but I do know that there have been a couple times that I have noticed that he shouldn't look like a guy that you should bet on. And so, now, but look at him now. He's got this bonus that he walks away with, and who knows if his career is over. It sounds like he wants to spend more time with his family, 63 years old.
When you win something like this, you deserve to celebrate. I'm going to get champagne, throw it on everybody. Everybody go crazy. Excuse me for the wives and girlfriends. They're going to get champagne in their hair. I'm sorry, but that's just part of the celebration. Because that's how Sac Nation do it. Because Stone Cold said so, baby. Hey, hold on. I got one more thing for Kittle. Do you smell what Stone Cold and Sac Nation is cooking?
That's Chris Jones, defensive tackle of the Kansas City Chiefs, enjoying being a champion. Obviously a big wrestling fan as well.
I didn't know that much about him. He went to Mississippi State, speaking of Mike Leach, and he was a second rounder, 37th pick in the draft. And, man, he is, you know, last year, did anybody notice he had 15 and a half sacks? I thought it was his name. It's too generic because I think Clayton tried to call him Smith today.
Yeah,
another generic last name, putting that on him.
I wrote down, I think when I was taking notes in the game. I can't remember. I think I wrote down Chris Long, but it's Chris Jones, and he's after his fourth year. They're going to have to lock him up or franchise him or whatever. But yeah, he had as you mentioned, Jim. He had three knockdowns in that game where, you know, they were crucial plays too. One of them was that drive that I talked about earlier, where the Niners needed to sustain that. I mean, it was a beginning of the – no, it was like 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and it was a 3rd and 5, and Kittle was wide open. It was going to be a completion.
Mm-hmm.
And he put his big old paw up there and knocked it down, did You know, there was a couple of tip passes in this game. There was, you know, where you saw the ball kind of wobbly. And somebody was talking about that. Somebody asked the question, were they playing with different footballs or something? Because there was a lot of wobbly throws.
Yeah.
And even like that one where Tyreek Hill, was it Tyreek Hill or Sammy Watkins, that was wide open?
That was Hill.
Yeah, and he kind of lollipopped
yeah,
it
to
him.
Yeah, and he just had to wait for it. Yeah. Yeah, Jones, he's a big dude. I just looked over at your screen. They list him at 310. I would say that's a little bit of an underestimate.
Light, yeah.
A little light.
6'6", 310 is a huge dude. Young guy, 25 years old. And
so they're going to have to pay him. They're going to have to pay Mahomes probably $40 million a year. Right.
Well, Jones made $1.2 million this year, and off of 9 sacks this year, and like Dave was saying, 15 last year. What's that going to get you?
They're 12
to 15 anyway, if not more than that.
And they're going to have to pay that. They paid Frank Clark. They're going to have to make some decisions on that team.
I'd have to look up how many of those are on the edge. There's probably some times where they line him up out there. But, I mean, for the most part, he's a defensive tackle. He's got 33 sacks in 4 seasons. That's hard to do, man. Mm.
All right, there you go. A little trip around the dial coming up. Everybody's happy for Andy Reid. I would assume those in Philadelphia are happy for him, but we'll find out for sure. El Hombre, Michael Bradley, is going to join us next year with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.